Right now, you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. Now live, Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. That was an interesting anomaly of the intro music trying to play itself twice, so I may have to do a little creative splicing this week. So, we are officially halfway through the first month of 2018. And today I'm joined with not one, but two of my co-hosts, Stephanie Connolly-Reisner and Andrea Vitamus. How are you guys doing today?
Very good. How are you doing?
Doing great. So, we have some things we need to talk about this week, folks. For one, I'm going to talk to Andrea first because I'm thinking, Stephanie, we should lead into what's going on with you because we're going to be talking about you tonight. You are our star tonight. But, Andrea, leading into the Do Magic Challenge, you were telling me before the show you've got big, big plans for the DoMagic.com.
Definitely. We've been doing some thinking and some working, and you know how it is, you know? When you think and work, we have a set schedule that is flexible enough now for the year that we're going to keep every year because people are going to start to make courses that use this outline and the Do Magic Challenges. Again, results over image are all about people actually doing the magic, and the community is growing. So if you go to it's domagic.com. I got to fix that with a K, domagic.com. It used to be called the Magical 30. There's going to be a yearly schedule that's up there so people can prepare a little better. In addition to that, we are starting to investigate ways to actually have not in person but live conferences that people will be able to talk with each other about doing the actual work and not just talking about their pet theory but the actual things of a community talking about what happens when you do magic. I think that's really what people want over the top marketing that we keep seeing. And that's the theme of the year. That's what we've been investing. If you listen to the last show on the Doors of Authenticity, this is exactly where we're going, even with the show and Do Magic and everything. I think it's been a long time coming. Those kind of digital communication things we're working on, they're almost done. It's just I'm going back to school, so everything seems to slow down once I cross that threshold, as it were, and put that Promethean or weight on my shoulders, as it were. You know what I'm saying, Jason?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Well, what you're telling me is that working full-time and going to school full-time, you don't have all this free time to just make things happen?
Yeah, about that.
I'm proud of you, man. You've really put your nose to the grindstone past couple years.
One of the things that people should realize about the Do Magic Challenge, I think everyone has gotten results. Sometimes it's painful results, and I promise this will lead into the show, you know, but people don't realize it was as a result of a Magical 30 challenge that I lost about 100 pounds, you know. And that's and actually did some magical work that seemed to actually change some physiological issues I had to make it possible to lose that. Now, that said, as I say, talk about my shape-shifting course, that kind of magic requires oftentimes to be continuously refreshed. It just so happens that the way you refresh it also builds your magical power, so it's just a good daily practice. Right?
Mm-hmm. So what we're looking at is, I think that's going to be the theme of tonight. We're going to talk about setting goals, pursuing goals, staying consistent with keeping up with your pursuit of those goals. Because so many people out there...
We're going to talk about prosperity, right?
Well, we're going to talk about prosperity, but I haven't gotten to that point yet, Andrea. Because right now I'm just bringing up the fact that so many people think that magic is a one-shot big bazooka blast, and my life's going to radically change, but we're going to set you straight tonight in so many different ways.
Yes, yeah, like, we could get in trouble, a lot of trouble with this show, because there's a lot of books that basically present that as the corpus of magic. That's what it is. You just do these one spells and booyah, you know? And that sells a lot of books. And we're not going to go into it that far, but not everyone agrees with that. And I think when we have our co-host come on the show, which she's already on the show, and we start talking about it because we already did transition to it, I think one of the things is that a book like Demonic Prosperity Magic, which is the book we're going to talk about today, right? You think it's just you call the demon and you get your goods and you go home, right? Isn't that the common parlance? That's what people think, right? Sell your soul and get money.
Yes.
Well,
the book correctly suggests that that's the most garbage idea ever in the history of magical ideas.
What? I thought she was going to tell us how to make a Faustian pact tonight.
Well, now, don't be stupid, Jason.
Ooh.
Ooh. There.
Well,
the idea of a pact is romantic. You know, it's awesome in a way. You call the devil or one of his lieutenants the demons, and you sign away your soul, and you live this life of luxury on a boat, like a luxury boat that you own, and you're a superstar, and you're famous, and all that. And that sounds really good. And when people actually challenge you on this point, because trust me, I've had this done to me in television interviews back in the day when I was a hot property, which I'm not now. But back in the day, people would ask, well, why aren't you a millionaire or a billionaire? You know, you could just sell your soul to the devil, do whatever.
Right. Well, and that doesn't work, does it?
No. I don't think it works, and I don't think people understand what... Now, granted, there's some people who are, by the accident of our birth, they're wealthy. This isn't the people we're going to talk about today.
No.
Because, okay, maybe they cut a deal with the devil before they were born. Argue whatever you want to argue there. But most people who are self-made millionaires, it doesn't work that way. And I think this book reinforces it doesn't work that way for magicians either.
Right. And I think the underlying concept of the entire book is that being prosperous in any area of your life requires some effort on your part. And there are a lot of requirements, actually. There's a requirement of being honest with yourself, a requirement of hard work, a requirement of actually evaluating where you are at and where you want to be. So Because, you know, we talked about, you and I, and Jason and Andre, you and I, have all three of us have talked about people who, they just, oh, what am I trying to say here? Sorry, I'm getting sidetracked. I have a squirrel brain today. One of you guys want to help me out here?
Well, sure.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Sorry. It's the lack of coffee. That's why I'm drinking it.
I'm still in the first cup.
Once you get to two cup, you start sounding like me, all happy and like foamy the squirrel, like, yeah! I mean, but honestly, like, this idea, and I'm glad you used prosperity. I've gotten in numerous fights with other authors about the wealth commentaries, which pretty everyone who follows the show knows that, just because I have a personal definition of wealth that actually includes you being wealthy, but I'll leave it alone. And prosperity is much closer to, I think, what most people should be talking about. And I think the issue is fundamentally, you can't separate you from your prosperity. It's just not going to happen. And it's this idea that you can just go to the spirit world and miracles happen. Now, miracles can happen, but not in the way you think. People think the miracle that's going to happen is, I called the demon and won the lottery. And one of the facts that people don't realize about I called the demon and won the lottery is that most people, when they win the lottery, their life turns out to be worse than when they were working. I mean worse. Like, they suffer... Most people suffer horrendous depression. Their finances go to shit. They literally, once the time that the 20-year payout of the lottery is done, is they are bankrupt and, like, almost ready to go on the streets. And that's because they got exactly what they asked for, and you can't separate you from you. You can't do it. Like, there's all these things that lead to... There's different roads that could lead to wealth, but all of them involve effort and planning or intelligence and careful thought.
Right. And, well, not only that, but also a change in your thinking. And I discussed that in the book too, is you have to change how you think about wealth, because if you're constantly, if you are born and raised thinking like a poor person, that can actually keep you poor the rest of your life.
Yes, yeah.
Adjust all of those things. There's so many things that you have to adjust and work with to get yourself out of the rut that you're in. I mean, because nobody comes to buys a book like that because they're already doing well, right? They want more.
And I think what prosperity is something people always want more, but you have to realize, put it into perspective a little, like into Maslow's hierarchy. I think people have to do this when they talk about prosperity magic. And actually, like, the book kind of goes into this. You don't mention Maslow's hierarchy per se, but it is there. And you have to understand, wealth comes from each stage of the Maslow hierarchy, but as you go higher in the hierarchy, you're getting more and more prosperity. So if you're worried about, I think I taught this at a class once, if you're homeless, you know, perhaps getting a mat to sit on is your sphere of availability, of what you could actually enchant for and reasonably get, or getting consistent access to a homeless shelter, you know, which gives you showers and stuff. You know, if you're already at the, you know, you're working at McDonald's and you can barely afford an apartment or something like that with a roommate, perhaps the next sphere of availability that you start looking at is, well, what would be necessary? It might require trade school or a lot of effort, right? You're not just, or you start your own business. You know, that's the other way to go around it. But even that is what's realistic. You know, like everyone thinks they just do the spells and boom, they're going to be wealthy. But most small businesses fail. People have to realize that. Like, if you even stay afloat for 2 years, your magic's working pretty well, you know, and you're doing the things you need to do. On top of that, if you're within a year breaking even or profitable, your magic's really working. Now, we're talking about a year time frame for a small-time business. I think that is a total reframe for most people, like on money, magic, and wealth. Now, that said, if you're already at the point where you're doing consulting work, you have a professional degree, or you have a professional career, and you're freelancing on the side, well, it's easy to pull a lot more money in, right? Because all of a sudden, you're still paying for that money in hours, right?
Right.
You know, and you're still paying for the effort. Like, even with a small business, even if you're doing stuff that's like, as Tim Ferriss would say, you know, the whole, you know, passive income, you still have to do things to make new products to keep that going. You still have to do marketing on a almost daily basis, of which, you know, everyone knows that I'm terrible at. Stephanie's pretty good at it, but me, not so much, you know. And if you don't, it's like you're insulting the spirits by asking.
Right.
And, well, and they, yeah, go ahead, Stephanie.
Oh, no, I was going to say, there's a lot of maintenance involved in something like that. And we were talking about that a little bit before the show, too, is that maintenance, how a lot of different magics require maintenance. It's not like you just do magic one time, get what you want, and it just stays there. I mean, it especially depends on what area you're looking to do the work in, too. I mean, there are so many factors, and a lot of people do really believe it's just one spell, one demon, one pact, and boom, you're going to be wealthy, and then you're not going to have a care in the world, and that's just not how it works.
Right, and the thing is that I think people even go further than that, right, because they're not actually thinking these internal issues are going to keep cropping up, especially if they were raised a certain way. Like, you have to literally stay on top of it. This is like, from my personal experience, I know, and Jason has literally seen me since I kind of, like, went into somewhat hiding with the public. Like, I've increased my income by $25,000-$30,000 a year. That's good results by anyone's standard, I think.
Absolutely. Right?
And I have to stay on top of it. Like, it's like the stuff where we're talking about the health issues. Like, I have physiological problems. When I do certain things, I can push those physiological problems to nothing. But when I stop doing them, metabolism gets all kinds of screwed up real quick. But it's a magical process that's strengthening my body, and it's a magical process that's strengthening my mind to keep those inner doubts and those inner worries of financial stuff that everyone has away, so I can just concentrate on, you know, what am I doing right now? What not so much the want of money or the need of money, but what am I doing to manifest stuff, to bring that? Like, what am I working on to build stuff? What? All that. And I think people think that, oh, we'll do one spell, you get this money, and they spend it.
Right. They spend it as quickly as they get it.
And I mean, I've done spells for money where I knew I was going to spend it. I had no illusions of what I was going to do with it. Like, I literally did the spell, and they work, to get right. extra cash so I could blow it. People also feel guilty about that. Like, oh my God, how can you say that? Okay, well, I can say that because I'm honest with myself and I know what I want.
Right.
Right now, I know what I want. I mean, and I know if other people listening, if you had a negative reaction to that comment that I would do spell work to get money so I could just blow, I'm not talking like casino blowing. I mean, if you want to gamble it away, that's okay. I mean, like upgrading computer equipment, stuff I don't really need, but I want, and I don't feel the least bit guilty about it. But I guarantee you, a lot of the people listening to the show will feel guilty and angry at me because I'm saying I should feel guilty about that because it doesn't fit in with the ideas of money they actually have. And if you're not staying on top of it, that becomes your reality all the time.
Well, let me tell you something.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. What are you going to say, Stephanie? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say there are some people who like that. If they could win $1 million lottery tomorrow, but if their spending habits are so horrible, they'll be broke within no time. You know, whereas somebody with solid management skills, money management skills, and you know, some idea of how to save some of that money or to make it work for them is going to keep that same amount of money longer.
Wow, so, now I feel guilty like I'm being judged or something because I'm it's a lot of money. No, I'm just kidding.
you know what I'm saying. Anyway, okay, Jason, go ahead.
What I like about your book, Stephanie, is the way you began it, because I know a lot of people are going to listen to our conversation right now and they're going to be like, yeah, okay, well, the three of you, you all have houses, you all have cars, you all have stable income coming in, but me, I have nothing. How am I supposed to make something out of nothing? Stephanie began this book taking you all the way back to her college years when she was broke as a joke, had nothing, was living in a roach-infested apartment, and said step one of the magic was going, this is not acceptable.
Yes. Absolutely. You have to figure out where you are and where you want to be, and you need to say, okay, this isn't working for me. I need to do something to change that. And I always tell people, you know, when you're working with demons, it's not that they won't sometimes just like give you something or throw a really good opportunity right at you when you're doing the magic. The key is you need to be able to look at that opportunity and say, oh, that's an opportunity that I need to take in order to get myself out of this rut. So they can be throwing opportunities at you, but if you can't see the opportunities for what they are, you're going to miss a lot of really good opportunities to pull yourself up and to get the hell out of the situation you're in.
I was just going to say two things right about that line. Is that, like, this goes right back to where we were starting. Even knowing where you want to go, uh-huh, is limited by where you're at, like, in a lot of ways. So, like, when we start talking about, and this is why I keep saying, like, it's a process. I'm like, I think I had a very similar magical start where I was totally broke and homeless and shit. And, oh, wait, I shouldn't say that, sorry. But I meant the swear words. So, conceiving of myself owning a house at that point isn't going to happen. You can mentally conceive of it. You can say, oh, I want to own a house, but you have no real conception of how to get there. Like, because you're too far from it. Like, they're too far from the goal. Like, where I'm at now, I can conceive of the steps I need to be a millionaire. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy road, but I can conceive of what I can need to do based on my work, a lot of work. And some of the, let's get into some of the demons in the book, because this is a good segue, actually. I can conceive of it because I've done certain work to build my confidence, my public speaking, my ability to influence, my ability to manage the money, my ability to have high-level technical skills, although that might not matter. The speaking ability might matter more for that next jump. And I can conceive of that through my work with, like, demons like Payman and, in some degree, Soroth. But Soroth kind of set me back a little, but that's okay. We could talk about that, or I have talked about that, but in a good way. But Payman, you know, is all about that sort of stuff. But it's not like I did one spell with Payman to say, yo, make me wealthy or get me this.
Right. You actually do have to start, like, with small things. Like, when I lived in my crappy apartment, I was like, okay, I need to find a non-roach-infested place to live that, you know, is going to cost me about the same. And I actually ended up finding a place that cost less and wasn't roach-infested. So it's little things like that. So it's not like, so yeah, because, I mean, you're right. If somebody starts out homeless, they're not going to be able to say, oh, I want to own a house. Well, you can say that, but you may not know how to get there from where you're at. So you start with the small things. You start with the smallest things you can change, the things that kind of point you in the right direction. Because everybody's master of their own ship, aren't they? You just need to find a way to point things in the right direction. And, you know, and that's not always easy. You would think like something small would be easy, but sometimes it's not. And you do have to put in more effort and maybe get some demonic assistance to help you find that opportunity that you need. Well,
I think that comes down to this idea of magic being a quick fix. Not only that, it's this idea that magicking for small stuff, which I hear so much on the internet and through other books, is insulting the spirits. Nothing could be further from the truth. As far as I'm concerned, that magicking for small stuff is insulting to the spirits. In fact, what's insulting to the spirits is when you do magic and you're not willing to act on it. That's insulting, you know. But yes. If you're asking for something like, oh, I know where I'm at and I know I could get a dollar raise, that's mm-hmm. not insulting to the spirits, you know.
No.
And it's also, yeah, it's also reasonable. Like, if you're making minimum wage and you're asking for a dollar raise an hour, that is a reasonable thing. You can conceive of that raise. Like, if you're asking double your salary, a daemon might give you that, but you're not going to like the road, I guarantee you. Because, like, it's such a big challenge that your life has to fundamentally change, and it could change over, like, a year or two, because it'll take that long, even by asking. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about consequences, but one of the things that I could see happening with some of the demons you name, especially like Clannock, mm-hmm. did I pronounce that right?
I don't know. I say Clownick.
Clownick, mm-hmm. Who's getting his 5 minutes of fame right now, is honestly, if you summon him and ask him for money, the first thing he will probably do is have you get fired from your job.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Especially if you're working minimum wage, and then you'd be forced to go back and live with your friends or something. And that pain and suffering will force you to go get skills, like you go back to school or trade school or
right.
something, you know. And that sounds like the opposite of prosperity magic. But when you come out the other side, you'll actually be able to make what you asked for, twice as much money.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, too, is like there are some demons that people work with for wealth and prosperity, and it might work for some people, whatever, maybe some short windfalls, but when we're talking lasting prosperity, that's a totally different thing as opposed to short windfalls. So there are some demons that are good for short windfalls there, but there are some demons that people will work with for wealth and prosperity, and they'll be confused, because at that point it's like it doesn't work in the way they expected, and they're like, well, gosh, why didn't that work? And it's like, well, because you're using that demon in the wrong context.
I think that's very true. I think,
yeah.
Clunock, I won't rip on him. I was thinking of working on him myself. But it's a judge demon, right? It's almost a saturnal mm-hmm. demon, right?
Yes.
What's he going to tell you? You're screwing up.
Right.
Okay, this is where you're screwing up. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. That's very helpful. However,
it may not be such nice criticism, though, either.
Yeah. Maybe you're beep, 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 or something like that, right?
Right.
And where you're like, did that demon just say that to me? Oh, my God, he just pointed out my worst flaws. Yeah, well, uh-huh. that's what judges do, you know?
Yep.
You can either correct it or not. I mean, but other demons, like, we can probably, like Sorath, that's another one where...
Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to jump into working with Sorath like it's no big thing. Well, I'll tell you something. If I have yet to meet a magician who actually worked with Sorath who didn't get their ass burned in some way.
Oh, yeah. Let me talk about Sorath. I won't name the author. I won't name the author who tried to replicate my steps to work with the biggest and baddest negative thing on the planet and almost ended up in jail for drugs. But it happened, you know.
Yeah.
Because and it's exactly the way Sorath works. Everyone wants to work with Sorath, and I think he wants... This is a demon that may want victims. Like, not packs, victims. And I say that with love in my heart for the demon, right? Like, I know this demon very well. And the reason I say that is, you know, Sorath is a demon where be careful what you ask for, mm-hmm. because you might get it. And that isn't always good, you know? Right. Like,
especially if you have skeletons in the closet, not good at all. Because that right. stuff will come to light.
Yeah, like, you want women to throw yourselves at you? No problem. You want to go to parties where they just offer you all the drugs you want? No problem. Except then you realize the cops were watching when you did that, like, you know, because you weren't being careful. Because Sorath, the problem with Sorath isn't that it's a demon of the sun. It's the problem that people will reach the sun and get destroyed, like the Icarus myth. Because most positive aspects of the sun, you know, they kind of mitigate the sun a little. They kind of go, oh, you're not ready for this. Let me help you out. They're beneficial. Sorath is both. So Sorath says, come to the sun. Come to the sun. Get all the people to give you success, right, and attention. And then you know from your experience, right, you're working 70, 80 hours a week and starting to have anxiety because you can't keep up with everything.
Right. Right. And like, that's exactly where I found myself with Sorath.
It's like it's magnifying everything to the point that you're like, you will self-destroy, and that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
That's the risk. It isn't that the first time Sorath comes to you, it's going to be like, oh, you're going to be famous and rich, and let's burn you right from the point. It's that you start to actually burn yourself, because the fame and attention is a drug. Now, I had some of the opposite effects with Sorath, but by my own hand, you know.
Right.
Recognizing this aspect of the drug nature of fame and that the drug aspect of success, where the people giving you that success actually define you, was enough to make me go all Taoist for a while and hide in the forest, essentially.
Yes.
Because you start to realize your identity is intimately tied to other people's expectations of you, and everyone says that as a magician, but you don't understand it. People are understanding it now more on Facebook, but I don't think they understand it. But in the right. way of how their personality shifts as a result of what is liked, and it's another way that you get destroyed when you're working with this demon. It's very subtle. Like, the first way is, it's the sun, and you can burn up. That's the easiest, the easy one, right? If you can stand in the flames of the sun, okay, you're doing better, right? You can handle the Sorath. And then there's this subtle aspect of, be careful what you're actually asking for, because it might just, in a literal way, destroy your personality or your soul. I don't want to say soul, because it sounds like we're selling soul to demons again, but it is sort of like that. If you're not in volition and control of where you're going and not understanding these influences, doesn't matter how famous or successful you are. I think from a demonic a center point of view, you're asleep.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing about Sorath is he basically shines a light on, first of all, like, all of your flaws for, like, everybody to see and pick apart. And that, a lot of people don't realize, but when they're looking for fame, success, and wealth, and they're looking to Sorath for that, because usually that's what they're looking for, like, being in the spotlight and all of that, they don't realize that all of these things are going to be illuminated, and that people are going to see this larger-than-life thing and all of its flaws, and you're going to start getting criticism, and you're going to start having, you know, everybody wants a piece of you, and you're going to realize that you don't have any time for yourself anymore, and you're going to feel like you're losing yourself. And I think this is where also, you know, like, so many people will go to Hollywood or something, and they'll become famous, and then they'll just completely self-destruct, because fame and success are hard. It's not that you get fame and success and everything's just hunky-dory. You create a lot of new problems for yourself at that point. So people really need to consider if they really want fame and success, or would they really just be happy to pay their bills month to month doing a job that they actually like?
Yeah, see, this is where I would go. The idea of Sorath is this subtle destruction of yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
You either have to, like, fully embrace that, or you will be destroyed. And I consider going, doing a job you want, not making so much money and all that, that's the Taoist idea of going to the forest in modern sense. Like, you are avoiding all that because you realize that's the risk of it. And that's a valid spiritual path. This is the thing that people don't understand, I think, particularly about Sarath, is what he actually brings to the table is exactly what you think you want. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing the kind of self-work you need, what you think you want is the things that could probably destroy you the fastest.
Yes.
Almost yes. always.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarath just... Sarath is such an amoral daemon. Like, it's not immoral, amoral.
Mm-hmm. And
in that, from Sarath's perspective, like, you going and being able to destroy a random person, why would the sun care? It doesn't.
Right.
And this is probably why, like, Sarath gets treated as the Antichrist in various texts, because it's so...
Indifferent.
Indifferent. Mm-hmm. Like, that isn't to say Sarath will be indifferent for you at all times. You eventually, if you work with Sarath enough, he will be entertained. That's the best way I have to say it. Entertained by you. And he wouldn't just openly destroy something that entertains him, per se, because he's entertained. That's the wrong word, but it's close to that. Like,
right. Right. That's the general vibe of it.
Because it makes no difference to him whether or not you're rich, success, or at wealth. He doesn't care. But it's entertaining to see you struggle with it.
Right. And to see how you... No, it doesn't sound horrible at all. I mean, that's... A lot of people don't realize that demons, they just are. They don't really have a stake in whether or not you succeed or not, or whether your ritual fails or not, or whether you change yourself or not. They just... They're like, okay, and then they just kind of enjoy the show, so to speak. Absolutely. But Sarath, really more so. I mean, that's like...
I generally think there is a demonic agenda, which I'll eventually write in a book, but Sarath is one that, while he might share in that, he makes it clear. And I think that's not true. I have examples of where it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
That Sarath will actually stick up for people who he... But it's not like you just get that. Like,
one, you have to gain the respect first.
Yeah, you have to gain respect, and he will work for you. And then the second thing I'll say that is, once you do gain his respect,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't pull the same kind of stuff. He waits for you to ask. So it's not like you're always dealing with the fame and success. It's like...
Right.
I'm standing here. I'm going to keep coming to you. That's just been my personal experience. Like, I'm going to make myself known, but you have my respect, so I'll wait till you're ready, because you know you have to be ready.
Right. Right.
Now, we could talk a lot about Sarath. A lot. Because he's getting his 5 minutes of fame. I've had, like, 10 people message me saying, oh, I'm going to work with Sarath. It's so powerful. I'm like, wait, what? Why are you working with Sarath? What is your reasoning there? It feels so powerful to me. I want to work with it. I'm like, dude, you need to think about this a little bit more. Like, there needs to be a reason you're doing this. Like, I certainly had reasons when I started work with Sarath. It wasn't just because the spirit was powerful.
Right. Right. And when I started working with Sarath, I had a clear idea of where I wanted to go, too. And that's, I think, is really important. You need to have you need to be on a trajectory toward a certain goal, and you need to be focused on that before you even go to Sarath. I would not even go to Sarath without that.
I would agree. I would agree. Yeah. I was looking for certain personality changes
mm-hmm.
to do certain things, and these were painful. Lots of these kind of lead into other painful lessons about people that you don't want to think is true. Because Sarath is also probably one of the most cynical demons about people, that once you understand the energy, how cynical of a demon Sarath is you can't even begin to understand. I mean, I don't mean the personality as such, but I just mean what the information there is. And it's cynical in a way that we don't want to admit that people do this most mm-hmm. of the time, but they do. And it's like when you actually admit that that's how things work. It's somewhat horrifying.
Right.
Like, because you don't want to think people are quite as conditioned as they are. Or,
right.
You know what I'm saying about Soreth, right?
Yes. Like, I know exactly what you're saying.
You have to face some brutal truths about humanity that nobody wants to admit.
Right, that we're all motivated by our own self-interests, and, you know, a lot of people will step on other people and use them to get with it where they want to go, and there's a lot of things there that you have to start looking at when you're talking about that type of success or fame, if you're seeking it.
Or you learn things about how people gravitate to your image.
Right.
And not really the real you.
Right, exactly.
That was the issue I had with Soreth.
I was
kind of like, I will not be my image. I am a freaking person, and I don't care. That's literally the end product of why I walked away from, like, most public things for the last year and a half, was literally as a result of that realization that my identity would be seriously destroyed by this process of what was being described to me. And I will not be a slave to the mob, as it were.
Right. And I absolutely agree. I think that's really what it comes down to is, for me, but the biggest thing that Soreth started to do was, because I have, like, mild social anxiety, and a lot of people don't know this, my internet persona is completely different from who I am as a person. I'm very introverted. I'm very introverted, and I am kind of shy. I am a little awkward, socially awkward. So for me, public speaking has just been the bane of my existence. I've actually gone into a room full of people and, like, to teach a class and actually frozen up. And luckily I had someone there to help me. Kind of like I did on the show earlier today. I do that sometimes because there's so many things going on in my brain, I can't stop and pick what I'm trying to say. It's a very weird thing. But, so it is. It's like an anxiety thing. And it still happens even to this day. So the first thing that Soreth did when I started working with him for success in my writing career, in the fiction area, because that's where I'm kind of focusing right now, I started having all of these events and opportunities for public speaking thrown at me. And I was like, well, and of course it caused, like, this great terror in me, because I knew that, like, this, if there's anything that would destroy me, it would be interaction with other people on a regular basis, because I find it so draining and so exhausting. And that's what he was throwing at me. And so I started okay, this is what I asked for. This is exactly what I asked for. And this is the job. And if I want the job and I want to be successful at it, it's part of the job and I need to learn how to deal with it. And so that has been kind of like my thing for the last couple of years, is public speaking and more public appearances. But I knew that going in. I knew it was one of my problems, and he shined a light on it and said, this is where you need the work. And that's what he threw at me.
I mean, for all the people who think spirits are just vending machines, that should pretty much tell them right then and there, like, do you really want to work with Soreth? I actually think that Chunuk would be kind of similar, probably less. He might just tell you that.
He's not as intense.
Soreth will just be like, I'm going to manifest this in your life, and you deal with it. Right. You know, or you're ignoring this. That's what happened to me. You're trying to make it look like people's human nature isn't human nature. Not aggrandizing, that's not the right word. Idealizing people's best case. That's not them. That's right. A harsh realization when you have to start looking at people when you have a generally, I don't know, Jason, you know how I generally look at people's potential, right?
Right.
Yeah, not at them, and that sort of killed that in me.
And it was painful.
Yeah, and I shared that problem with you for many years, the whole idea of, I wasn't realistically looking at where people were at that I was dealing with. I was looking at what I knew they could be if they made the right choices.
Right. Sora's lesson is, they will never make the right choices. That's, again, he's a cynical demon, right? Unless you force them to. That is literally Sora's in a nutshell. Like, if you're going to be the son, you force them to do this. And right. They will. Otherwise, don't ask me.
It's throwing you into the fire. Literally throwing you headfirst right into that fire. And saying, let's see if you can rise like the phoenix out of this fire. You either rise or you burn. It's one of the two. So.
Now, for the record, I want to say that Zorath could be very useful for money rituals. You know, by refocusing from the Zorath work is part of the big reason that I increased my wealth by 25,000 plus.
Right.
Let's just be honest.
Right.
His thing is, you're focusing on the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
Radio edit.
Oh, oops. but basically, beep those people, and let's see what happens from there.
You know? Right.
And that's after I earned his respect. That's after he was, you've earned my respect. You have my attention. I'm not going to screw you over. However,
right.
That's on the positive side of things. When you're just playing around with the demon, he looks at you like, you're just a piece of wood that's going into the sun.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still in that area where he's like, where I'm gaining respect. I'm not even to that point where I'm respected. And I'll just say that right now. And I've been working with him for almost a year now. So
I was stupid with my work with him. So I probably took a lot of beatings that I didn't need to. I earned his respect that way.
So you two have been talking realistically about being very careful about what you're actually asking for. And then, but you are talking about how you both stepped up to the plate and persevered through what was being taught to you to become better now than what you were. Now, Stephanie, what I want to ask you, what are the consequences when someone goes to a daemon, makes a request, says they want something, and then when the challenges are presented to them to get what they want, they go, oh, well, that's too hard, and they drop the ball and they back out.
Well, and of course, the actual consequences are really going to depend on the person, but the reality is that you can really end up getting yourself into a lot of trouble. You can get yourself in a lot of financial trouble, get yourself in trouble with the law, get yourself in trouble with... Because generally, when people fail at magic like this and they don't hold up their end of the bargain of what they're supposed to do, you start work with a demon and you say, okay, I'm going to do this in exchange for this. That, first of all, that works psychologically on a person, and you end up pretty much, in a way, almost cursing yourself. But I've seen people actually slip into drug use. I've seen them slip into criminal behavior, and then they get arrested and thrown in jail. Or they lose everything. So when you're working magic of this type, you really need to... There are consequences to every piece of magic we do, whether good or bad consequences, there are consequences. So before anybody... And people are always like, oh, I want a safe way to work with a demon. Well, there's no such thing as safe. If you want safe, stay in your home and wrap yourself in bubble wrap. And even then, you probably end up burning yourself or whatever. There is no such thing as safe. Life is not safe. I don't care who you are or what you do. You could be walking to the store and get hit by a car. That's just the way life is.
Well, yeah, and not to pick on the demons, because there's no safe magic working with any spirit.
No,
exactly. I think demons tend to be more like wrathful Buddhas or like petro spirits in voodoo. Like, they tend to not be as compassionate about showing you the mistakes you're
right.
Making.
Well, like, and they're lesson teachers. That's what they are. They're like, I'm going to teach you a lesson, and you're either going to better yourself from it, or you're going to get screwed.
Yeah, and whenever I write the book, which I won't name so no one steals my title, I was going to talk a lot about that, and I think this is the thing. And people are using these spirits in a lot of ways as kind of vending machines, especially with some of the things going out there. I think that is really just the cursory level of the work. The second level of the work is you know, if they have an interest in you, they're going to be around. And some of these spirits will try to, like we were saying, teach lessons that are not necessarily human issues. And they don't necessarily have human, particularly Christian morality. Like I said, we went back to the asking for money just so you know you can blow it on stuff. Is stuff that would horrify some people, right? Like, why would you do that? There's people who are starving out there. Well, you know, that's true, but, you know, if they could, they would probably ask that. I guarantee you people like in Haiti or other places, when they get to have more money and they get through Maslow's hierarchy, they are working through Maslow's hierarchy too. Like, so they might try to do that. We should talk about some other daemons, because we talked about Sora so much, and he's not the only person in this book.
Right. There's Belial, there's Belphegor. Belphegor's always interesting. You and I are still working on that book of Belphegor.
And Belphegor's another very interesting, I think, daemon, because you think you just go and get money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how it rolls. Right? You could actually offend Belphegor if you work with Belphegor too much, because you would get lots of ideas and you can't act on them, and that's offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And from the daemon's point of view, even if you have a pact, like a more formal pact, something you talk about this, you won't be able to do all of the things. You have to measure out. So it's not like Sora. Sora doesn't care if you can do all the things. Belphegor may not tell you you can't do all the things. He or she, depending on how you interpret the daemon, essentially knows that you can't do all the things, and will assume that you'll work with the spirit when you can do the things, or some of the things.
Right.
So this is like the wrong, it'll work out well, but it's the wrong demon to work with if you're not going out there and hustling. I mean, like, you got to hustle on what the idea is or the opportunity. And it works out. It's cool. Like, it'll go on the right thing. But once you stop hustling, or you don't do the other planning and all the other stuff, project planning that you're talking about, alluding to a lot of in this book, it just stops. Because at that point, you get the opportunity, and as you're working the opportunity, it's like luck will come your way, but it's not a magic pill either.
Right. Well, and the other thing about Belphegor, interestingly, so like, for example, I've used him a lot in job work. Especially like when my husband has like all these applications out and nobody's getting back to him, I will, you know, contact Belphegor, you know, talk to him about this, you know, get the ball rolling. And then the next day, within 24 hours, my husband was getting, like, you know, three or four job interviews a day after that. And where, nice. For months, nothing had happened. So, he is good at, like, you know, when things are, like, dragging and you're like, come on, let's move on already. Let's throw some Belphegor at that, especially if you're already working something. But you got to actually be working it. But there's also another thing that Belphegor is, like, really good at that people may not realize is he's good at keeping you safe from financial ruin. Mm. So, almost as a protectorate for that. So he protects what you already have as well, so you don't fall any further. And one of the prayers that a traditional demonolatry prayer that people have done within like the circle of stones during the rites of Belphegor, which that'll be covered in another book. That's a topic for another time. But in that particular ritual, you ask for, you know, to always have enough food, always have a roof over your head, always have enough money to pay the bills. And so it's not like asking for more, it's asking for sustaining, like a sustaining type prosperity, as opposed to, you know, make things bigger or better, you know what I'm saying? So there's that aspect of Belphegor too.
I consider that
not totally unholy separate from the first aspect. It's this idea that money just becomes easier, is almost the idea. But that doesn't mean you don't work at it. It means that the effort to money quotient changes. That's my way I think of it. Like, so your job just gets easier. You still have the same amount of money, but the money, the effort quotient is less. Or you get an idea. Now, for people who don't understand the power of ideas, you know, Steve Jobs had an idea with Apple. Bill Gates had an idea with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now the effort to, for Bill Gates, who's still alive, the effort quotient to work, the effort quotient's very low after he invested some ideas. And I think that's why there's prayers to sustain. This is this idea of the effort quotient goes down.
Right.
It's that there's initial investment and then the effort gets easier.
Yes. Absolutely. So there is that aspect of Belphegor as well. So it's just kind of interesting to see like that demons aren't just one sided. They don't just have this like one set of attributes. There's a lot of other things that kind of go along with that that people may not see. That's why, you know, if you see like Belphegor and you see the word armor as one of his attributes, it's like, armor? What do you mean armor? What does that mean? That means maintaining what you have is what that means, and keeping it from harm. It's armoring yourself against external influences, like the economy, for example.
Yeah.
So,
and Belphegor relates to another demon you mentioned, which is Baal, and there's a convoluted history there, but that's okay. We won't necessarily go that unless you want to, but...
Right, well, you know, because we won't go into that too much, because, I mean, then you get into the name game and different aspects of demonic forces. People can read about that in the book, or do their own research on that, but... There's Belial. Some people say Belial. I don't like that. That sounds terrible. I prefer Belial. I pronounce words based on how I think they sound in my ear.
Sure. So Stephanie, you got about 2 minutes left
to throw out
any, like, how would you like to wrap this up and ideas you really want people to think about going into purchasing your book?
So I think one of the things that they want to look at is if you're looking for a long-term, sustainable prosperity in any part of your life, not just financial. We've talked a lot about money this time around, but other things like health, relationships, you know, love. If you're looking for abundance or prosperity in any of those areas, this book will teach you how to do that step by step. But you do have to be honest with yourself. You do have to be willing to work. You do have to actually have a plan. So it may not be for the quick fix crowd, although I do have some spells in the back for some quick money if you need quick cash, because there are times that we all need some quick cash. So there's that. But as far as how it's different from other books, I think it actually goes more into the self-work. So there is that. And then do you want me to go ahead and mention... the Goetia Masterclass I'm involved with?
You should. What are you doing with the Goetia Masterclass?
So I am involved with a few other people, and we're doing an Enochian and Goetia online masterclasses. I am only on the Goetia side of that, really. I mean, I do work with some Enochian, but I'm not probably not as deeply into working with Enochian spirits as some of these other people. But if you go to my website at sjreisner.com, you can look it up and read about it, and the sooner you sign up, the better the deal you get, obviously. You can get both classes for $125. They are online. They're video classes. You can take it from anywhere, and you can view them at your leisure. You don't have to, like, be at a certain place at a certain time. So, and the post that I have on my website actually explains what's in the class and what's going on with it. So that's pretty much it for me. I don't have any other events coming up anytime soon, but...
Well, there you go, folks. We've come up to the top of the hour, so I'm going to let the Illuminist take us on out. Go out there and get demonic prosperity magic. It's available, I believe it's on Amazon right now, correct?
Yes, it is.
All right. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week.